The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and by no means reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, a walk with Rod Dornan, who also goes by Al, a 78-year-old Wethersfield, Connecticut man with a bad back, who's become something of a media sensation for walking 2.2 miles every day, rain or shine, for more than 150 days, carrying a sign that says, "I walk for dreamers and all immigrants." We met him at his home, then headed out onto the sidewalk to hear his story. If you miss any of the episode or want to see photos of Rod in motion, you can find the program archived later tonight at reasonablycatholic.com, reminding you that there are only a few days left till the end of the fiscal year. Can you help the station meet its goal? Please go to WESUFM.org/pledge and give what you can. Thanks. Back in a moment with Rod. Hi, Al.
Hi, Maria. How are you?
Long time no see.
Yeah, this has been an amazing experience. I had a new insight last night. I was a business person for 41 years. And one of the principles in being a business leader is that you make plans to do things. You have meetings. You set up deadlines. And you progress through a series of events. And then, once you've got it all together, you take whatever the action is that was the goal. Well, what happened to me, I realize now, was nothing like that. This is the first time in my life that this has happened. On January 25th of this year, after I'd been watching the United States Congress on C-SPAN for several weeks debate whether they were going to add an amendment to protect dreamers to the budget bill, and after my frustration and my anger increased over those few weeks that I watched that Congress, I watched them place up five bills, all of which they knew at the outset would never, ever have a chance to pass. They were playing games with these innocent immigrants, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And what happened on that day, and I tell you the truth, it's very strange, but a voice from within me, I don't know whether it was God, I don't know whether it was my conscience, I don't know whether it was my sense of rightness, I don't know whether it was my son talking to me, but it doesn't really matter what it was. What matters is what I clearly heard. And that voice said, "For many times in your life, you've had the opportunity to step up, to step across a line and do the right thing, and you didn't take that step. It's almost too late now. You don't have much time left. You need to act." And I thought to myself, what can I do? I'm a 78-year-old, bent-over old man with a squeaky voice. What can I do? The response was so clear. Walk. That's what it said. Walk. So I started to walk. And here I am now. I've walked for 145 consecutive days, 2.2 miles every day. And now my commitment over that period of time has transitioned. It started out being I would walk until March 5th, which at the time was the deadline for Dreamers. When that deadline went away, I then, as I researched and found more and more about what was really happening here in this country, which has now become very public, as I researched more and more, I changed my commitment to be, I will walk indefinitely. Then finally, I changed my commitment to what it is today. I will continue to walk for Dreamers, not just Dreamers. Dreamers, all immigrants in America, and all refugees that are coming to our borders. And that commitment is that I will walk until I am no longer physically able to walk. So that's where I am. Now, what's happened during that period of time? Well, for the first, I think it was 88 days, not much happened. But since my commitment was not changeable, in my mind, I had no choice. I had to continue to walk. So for 88 days, I got very little response. I posted every day for the first day and every day thereafter on Facebook, which I never liked before. And I ended every post at the beginning with, I have walked today for 800,000 Dreamers. Now my ending of my post says, I walked today for 800,000 Dreamers, for all immigrants in America, and for all refugee families that come to our borders. So until the 88th day, nothing much happened. I got a little local response from my friends, oh, isn't this nice, and that sort of thing. Then on the 88th day, what happened was we had a little while, I met some people around here who were very interested in this and were involved in with Dreamers, and we scheduled a little walk at my house where people would be invited, and we invited the media. I think that was on April 28th. So Channel 3 did come, and they televised my walk, and they interviewed me, and also local public radio came, and they interviewed me also. So that was the first time I really got any attention beyond what was happening on Facebook and from a few people that were heavily involved in the immigration movement. So I kept walking, and I got a little more attention. And then some folks from the Hartford Courant called me and asked me if they could do a piece and what's called Hometown Heroes. Evidently every so many months they put out this section in the Courant on Sundays about somebody who's doing something that they consider to be a good thing. So these two people came. I know their names. I'll forget their names. Chloe Poisson was the photographer, and David Altamari was the writer. And they came, and I think, to my amazement, they were amazed. And so they did a video of me walking, an extensive video, and David wrote a fairly extensive piece in the newspaper. And the actual paper article is not coming out until the 24th of June, but they put on their website the entire story. And then what Chloe did, I actually went on to Twitter, which was another verboten place for me ever to go. But I said, I'm going to try. Maybe I can get some more attention here. So she posted the whole story to Twitter. So on a Friday, I had 29 followers on Twitter. She posted the story on sometime late Friday, and on Saturday night, I had 1,100 followers on Twitter. Facebook exploded, completely exploded. I've received thousands and thousands of messages from dreamers, from the parents of dreamers, from the friends of dreamers. It was like a miracle, a miracle. So now what has happened is these people are saying to me things like, you know, you're the first white person that ever said anything positive about what's happening here. I think that American people need to understand this is not just an anti-immigrant issue. This is an issue of white male supremacists who are trying to drive these immigrants, almost all of whom are not white people, out of our country because they have this dream that they can keep America white. And they have conned a lot of people who are good people in our country into believing that everything that's going wrong is the fault of immigrants, that immigrants are criminals, that immigrants are welfare people. None of this is true. I've done all kinds of research on the internet all along. None of this is true. So now, here I am. Now I have a platform. And actually, the truth is that deep in my heart, that's what I wanted, a platform. So what I'm hoping, what was like the dream, we all have dreams, we dream in our lives, but we say they're not really going to come true, but we like to dream anyway. Well, this is a dream that's beginning to come true. A dream that I can do something good, something big, not only in this local community where it's happening, but in this state, in this country, and in the world. That's what I believe. And I believe that I am able to do this, not because what I'm saying to you or anybody else, but because of what I'm doing. The focal point is what I'm doing. I'm walking, and I won't stop walking until there's big change in this country. And my son, when he was in high school, he got turned down 4 times by girls when he asked them to go to the prom. And of course, we as parents felt horrible for him. So I said to him, Aaron, how can you remain so upbeat? Because he was upbeat. I said, Aaron, how can you remain so upbeat in the face of this kind of rejection? And he actually smiled at me and he said, it's easy, Dad. I have high hopes, but low expectations. So that's where I'm at. I remember that phrase that he drilled into my head. I have high hopes. You know, my hopes are that I'll get to be on the morning TV show that is on right now talking about the immigrants at the border. I have high hopes that I'll be on ABC and NBC and CNN and CNBC, maybe even on Fox, who knows?
Well, I see you've gotten some attention from Chelsea Clinton, for one.
I have. I'm happy that I got, delighted that I got this attention because it was very helpful. But it was not Chelsea Clinton's message that blew up the internet for me. It was the article and the video that was published and released by the Hartford Courant. That's what caused Chelsea Clinton to pay attention. Okay, the messages still come in. Every day I get 50 to 100 messages from dreamers that say, thank you, thank you. Some of them tell me a little story. Some of them just say, I love you. Thank you for helping me. Okay. But this response has placed a huge burden on my shoulders, which I'm happy to take on, but it's a burden. And it's a burden that these people are literally relying on me to do something for them. They are personally coming to me and saying, please keep going. This was not like a group of people coming together, planning to do something. This was me alone. It just was a spontaneous thing. I never realized that or thought about that till last night. This was me just by myself starting to walk. And for a long time, it was me alone. So it was not the result of any plan or any organization setting something up. It was a spontaneous thing that came to me. And that's what I realized last night. It was that kind of a thing. Now, I just want to tell you a particular story. The first tweet that I tweeted was responded to by a young lady who was a dreamer, and she thanked me for doing what I was doing. Well, for some reason, I struck up a bond with this young lady, and her name is Daniela. And I exchanged private messages on occasion with Daniela about what was going on. And then after about 3 weeks, a message came out on Twitter from her, and it said, "I came here, my mother came here 13 years ago with her 9-year-old daughter. That's me. We came here because we were escaping from a civil war in Colombia. For the past 13 years, my mother has done everything by the books. She has gone to each of these appointments she's had with the Immigration Service, checked in, and they've always told her, no, we can't give you a path to citizenship or legal status, but just go back home and keep doing what you're doing. And for 13 years, my mother has worked 3, sometimes 4 jobs to give me the opportunity to finish high school, to go to college, and I'm now a graduate student at Johns Hopkins University. Last week, my mother went to her normal appointment at the Immigration Service. She was met by ICE agents who arrested her and brought her to a detention center. That happened after I met this young lady, after I met her. So I have a great bond with Daniela, but I think she symbolizes for me the heart of the terrible things that are going on. I'm really happy to see on this TV program that I was watching this morning on Channel 3 that a lot of attention is being paid to the question of separating children from their parents at the border. But my fear is, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but my fear is that there are a small group of people there, as I said, evil people, who are manipulating this. And my fear is that by shifting the attention to the border, the attention that has been being paid on dreamers and 11 million illegal immigrants who are in this country, who are not welfare people, who are not criminals, who are hardworking American citizens, in fact, in if not in law, that the attention is going to be shifted away from them. I think that we need to make sure that we're paying attention to the whole issue.
You are listening to A Walk and Talk with Rod Dornan, who also goes by Al Dornan, as he treads the sidewalks of his Wethersfield, Connecticut neighborhood in solidarity with dreamers, immigrants, and refugees. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. It's spring pledge drive time. Please do what you can to support this program and the treasure that is WESU, bringing you independent, freeform community radio that you can't find anywhere else. Please go to WESUFM.org/pledge. Thanks.
every day, hundreds and sometimes thousands of these immigrants are being rounded up and placed in detention centers across the country. I discovered during the course of my research that there are hundreds of these detention centers. I discovered that they ran out of space in the detention centers, and they made an agreement with the federal prison system to put some of these people in federal prisons. This is what's happening. This is an issue, as far as I'm concerned, that is connected to the future of our country. Are we going to continue to be the free nation that we always have been? Are we going to be able to go back and regain that sense of hope that I had when I was a boy? We didn't live in a perfect world. Black people were less than human in that world, treated that way. Women were treated as second-class citizens. But there was a sense of hope that existed when I was a boy. And I was lucky enough to be a white American boy. I was a child of privilege only by accident of birth. And today, that hope doesn't exist. There's a cloud over this country. There's a sense of no good future ahead. Only bad things lie ahead for us. And we need to change that. More of us need to step up. There's too much apathy. It needs to change. And if it doesn't change, bad things are in store for all of us.
You know, Al, it occurs to me, gosh, how long ago now was it that you went through the Just Faith program? And I feel like that was a moment that, not to overstate it, but radicalized you. Do you believe that your current zeal for this issue and other ones too, I could go on about other causes you've taken up, do you believe that was a signal moment in your evolution?
I don't believe it was a signal moment. It was a one of a number of places along the way in my life where I had the opportunity to take that extra step, and I was very involved in Just Faith, but I never took the extra step. I didn't have the courage to take the extra step. But it was
That's interesting. What do you mean you didn't have the courage?
Well, let's explain it in terms of what happened on this walk. For the first 62 days on this walk, I didn't carry a sign. So the only people that knew anything about what was going on were the people I talked to on Facebook, and they were just a number of friends, maybe 30, 40, 50 people at the most. And why I didn't carry a sign was because I was afraid of what people would think. Huh. And that's really along the way the reason why I didn't step. I was said, oh, people will think that I'm a wacko, people will think that I'm crazy, or people will have a negative reaction to me. But the truth is that during those 62 days, I knew that I was going to have to carry a sign.
So you eased into it, which makes sense.
I did ease into it. And my wife kept saying to me, you have to carry a sign. Nobody knows what you're doing there. And I said, oh, it's for me. But I knew. So what I did, and that's a good way of saying it, I eased into it. I made the sign. I have a stick, a walking stick that my son... Somebody brought it to me. My son was killed in an automobile accident 20 years ago. And he was returning from a leadership camp in New Hampshire. And when he was there, he made walking sticks for the other people at camp. He became sort of known as the maker of walking sticks. And this walking stick, I'm not sure whether it was actually in the car and somebody recovered it or somebody had it at camp. Well, they brought it to me, and it's been sitting here. It was sitting here for 19 and a half years in the corner. I never threw it away. Never would I throw it away. But last year I started to fix it up a little bit, whittled it down, and I stained it. And then the day I started walking, my wife said to me, why don't you use that stick to staple your sign to? And I did. I used that stick. So gradually, over a period of weeks, I made the sign, stapled it to the stick, and then on the 63rd day, which to people who don't have my fear of what people think, it doesn't seem like a big move. It was a huge step for me in my head. I knew I had to do it. I walked out the door with my sign, and I just blocked out the fact that people on the street might say, who's that old man wandering around the streets with a sign? I blocked it out. And from that day on, it's been easier and easier and easier for me to do what I'm doing.
Does your Catholic faith have any part in this?
Over the years, I have kind of parted ways with the old traditional church that I grew up in. I believe in a sense that I was brainwashed when I was a boy. You know, you were told not to read the Bible, just to do what the priest told you to do, and there were all these rules, and the Pope was infallible. They changed my name. When my mother and father decided to send all of us to parochial school, but the nuns told me that Roderick was not a saint's name, so I couldn't be called Roderick. And a lot of years went by, and I realized, it's kind of funny, but I realized when I was at a retreat from my church, a men's retreat, I realized that I had a little bit of animosity towards the nuns because they forced me to change my name, and I love the name Roderick. I love the name my family called me. So I sort of went on a campaign to try to get people to call me Rod or Roderick. It hasn't worked completely because my wife just can't deal with it. She's always known me as Al or Alan, and she can't get herself to call me Rod. So it's still a work in progress. People are now confused. They don't know what to call me. But I went away from my faith, in a sense, in terms of the traditional faith, but I never lost my attentiveness to the question of God and how the universe runs. I'm not an agnostic. I'm not one who says, well, I don't know, so I'm not going to pay attention to it. I'm somebody who has, throughout my life, thought about this question. And I don't think any of us, as human beings, can reason to the existence of a God. I don't think there's a God that can be reasoned to. But in my heart, I believe that there's no other answer, that there's a God. I can't explain it. I pray to God. Sometimes I say to God, am I talking to the wind? But I pray, and now that this has happened, I believe there's a real possibility that it was God who spoke to me on January 25th. So my Catholic religion has, you know, despite all the things that I think were wrong with it, it has stayed with me. It's part of my core values, and it's part of my inspiration.
Shall we take a walk?
Sure.
Did you bring a water bottle or anything?
I don't bring a water bottle. Okay. So I may have to, was it? But it stays really warm. But so far I haven't had a problem. I get a little dry in the mouth. But as soon as I get home, I have my big bottle of water that I kept. This is my sign.
Let's go.
Okay. I pick up my sign and I walk down the driveway, across the street, down the street, to the end of the street here. Walk this past this one main intersection that I have developed a science as to how to get across. Okay, we can go. Got to be careful, nobody is going. Okay.
Dangerous,
so,
Al.
Yeah, at this intersection. But I've got it figured out. I know exactly who's doing what. And I already told the chief of police in Weathersfield that they should be putting in a pedestrian button. He agrees, but nothing has happened. I think it's a state issue. So I have a prayer that I'm really connected, and it's very windy today, which makes it harder. So this prayer that I say, it says, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And I learned about that prayer when I was given a pamphlet probably 35 years ago talking about the life of a young man. His name was John Timothy Leary. And he graduated from Harvard University.
That was a honk of support there.
It was. I get honks of support occasionally. Sometimes people even pull over and talk to me. And everybody in the house is here. They know me. See? Are we okay?
Yep.
So, he graduated from Harvard. He could have had everything in life. And instead of making money, going off to make money, he chose to dedicate his life to poor people and to issues of peace and justice. He became a member of the Catholic Worker House in Boston, Massachusetts. I don't know whether a lot of people know about Catholic Worker Houses. They were formed by Dorothy Day. If anybody's interested, I strongly would recommend that they read the life of Dorothy Day. Anyhow, John Timothy, he was 24 years old, and he dropped dead.
Oh.
At the age of 24. But I read that pamphlet, and that was one of those moments when I was truly inspired, but I didn't step forward. So now, 35 years later, when I started walking, I found that pamphlet. I still had it stashed away. And I took it out and I reread that story. And he was just an inspiration, the way he chose to live his life.
Who else is on the list?
The second person that's on my list, not necessarily in any order, is Thomas Merton. He was a monk, a prophet, and an advocate for peace and justice all over the world. And he's the second person that I speak to along the way. And the third person I speak to is the best friend I ever had in my life. Good morning.
Good morning.
His name was Terry Murphy, and I met him in when I was living in Boston before I came to Connecticut. And he was actually the person that initiated the entire change in my attitude towards life. Till that time, my goal was to become a millionaire, to become rich. That was all it was about. And I had no sense of any human relationship that existed. I wasn't aware about people as people interacting with each other. I was a supervisor and a management trainee, very arrogant, very disrespectful towards my subordinates, talked to them in inappropriate ways. And Terry joined a bowling league that I had organized at the job. He didn't work there. He was the cousin of someone who worked for me. And Terry had asthma, severe asthma. He had to carry an atomizer with him all the time and use it all the time. He had to give himself shots every day. He was always gasping for breath, sometimes more than other times. So Terry, we would go out after bowling to a local pizza joint and have pizza and beer. And he just talked to me, and one day he said, have you ever been on a retreat? And I said, no, I never have, and I hadn't, despite being growing up as a Catholic. So we wouldn't say anything until maybe a couple of weeks later. He'd say, Have you thought about it? There's a retreat that I think you'd really enjoy. And I said, well, I don't know. So after he asked me four or five times, he was persistent, but gently persistent, I said, okay, I'll go. So I went on what is called the Cursillo in Christianity. It's a Spanish term, means a course in Christianity. In retrospect, really, it was a psychological event. And I don't say that negatively, because it changed my life. It caused me to take a whole different view of life, to realize that life was about human beings and the interactions of human beings, and that was where all of this process that I've gone through that led me here started.
If you're just joining us, we're with Rod Dornan, also known as Al Dornan, as he walks the talk along the streets of suburban Wethersfield, Connecticut, in support of dreamers, immigrants, and refugees. He's been out there every single day, rain or shine, and will keep walking, he says, until something changes. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters. Now back to Rod.
Walking man, walking man walks. Well, any other man stops and talks, but the walking man walks.
Well, the frost. Terry. Well, first I met him. He lived in Plymouth. His mother taught me how to play bridge at her kitchen table, which I started playing recently, but then stopped because of this. She died 6 months, very quickly. She got cancer and died 6 months after I met Terry. There were six children in the family. The father was an alcoholic, and when his wife died, he gave up on life. So what really happened is Terry, at the age of 21, I think, became the head of his family of six children. He was the oldest. I was Terry's best man at his wedding. He was 34 years old. He died. I was the pallbearer at his funeral, and never, I've met lots of great people, but I have never met anybody who was as dear a friend to me as Terry was. So Terry is the third person that I talked to. And the fourth person I talked to is my son, Aaron. I think I mentioned to you that he died. Next week will be the 20th anniversary of his death. And Aaron was a... I know all parents say this, but he was a good, good person. So Aaron is the fourth person that I look up to, and I think he's a big inspiration to me to keep going. And the last two people, my mother and father. And I did not realize.
Al?
Yeah.
I have an idea.
Okay.
Can I carry the sign and you carry the mic?
Okay.
For a little while?
Sure.
Ooh, the wind, it's like a sail.
People don't realize that. So, those are the six people I talked to. And today, I think because I'm talking with you, I'm forgetting about the pain, and I haven't had to stop. Good morning.
Morning.
Usually I have to stop two or three times before I get this far.
When
so,
do you turn around?
I turn around when I come to the end. We still have a long way to go.
We do?
Yes. So if you... Yeah, we're not even halfway. People, it doesn't sound like a long... It's 2.2 miles.
Can I ask you to turn around sooner and then maybe do the next leg without me?
Sure.
Okay.
I use those words of the illustrious Yoda. Do or do not. There is no try. I am not going to stop. I don't even think about stopping until I physically cannot move. That's how it is. So I just keep on going. And my mantra is the prayer of abandonment of Thomas Merton. And I am going to say that because it's very, very powerful. And it says, he says, "My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me, and I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I know myself. The fact that I think I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. But I do believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And if I do this, I know that you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. Therefore, I will trust you always, though I may seem to be lost in the shadow of death. I will not fear, for you will never leave me to face my perils alone." Yes, I have a prayer that I learned, a psalm, and it says, "I lift up my eyes to the mountain. When will help come to me? My help is from the Lord my God. When will help come to me? Fear and hunger taunt me. Warmness do I seek, and a feeling there that one must care is all I really need. I lift up my eyes to the mountain. When will help come to me? My help is from the Lord my God. When will help come to me?"
I think that guy wasn't a fan.
What did he do?
Guy went by, gave a big laugh.
Yeah, that happens occasionally, but I'm happy to say it doesn't happen that often.
Are you going to call it a day when we're done, or are you going to resume?
The walk?
I can drive you to where we turned
around. No, I'm going to walk. I have to walk.
You're going to walk. Okay, I can drive you to where we turned around.
No, what I'll do is I'll walk a little bit extra on the other end.
Okay.
To make up for the fact that I didn't get all the way to the end of the sidewalk. A week from Saturday, 30th of June.
Okay.
At 9:30 in the morning. We're hoping to get maybe about 100 people.
Wow.
We think that's a real possibility. And I feel it's my duty to continue walking for these people and to do whatever I can.
What has to happen before you'll stop?
I haven't really addressed that specifically, but certainly some positive legislation has to pass, and I'll decide then. It's spontaneous from the beginning, and it's going to stay spontaneous. I have no thought about what has to happen before I stop. The current legislation that they're talking about, it has built into it just a whole lot more discrimination against immigrants. These people are bargaining for certain changes in the laws regarding legal immigrants. They've very cleverly morphed this into a discussion of all immigrants. And there are two parts of the immigration laws that they hate. One of them was something that those who are out to destroy immigrants call chain migration. Chain migration allows people who come here, maybe a husband and wife, to petition to have their parents, their brothers and sisters come. They want to end chain migration completely. They want it to stop because most of the people who are bringing in their relatives are not white. And the second issue is the lottery system. Now there's a lottery system under which they allow a certain number of immigrants to come to the country. And that lottery system tends to produce more non-white people. Therefore, they want to end it. They want to end it and replace it with what they call a merit-based lottery system. So they'll pick the people who are going to be most beneficial to America. And most of those people will be white people. And so there's a lot of danger that exists in this whole, you know, what are we going to do for Dreamers issue? People don't fully realize. So how much are... Good morning. How much are the supporters of immigration going to give up, or how much should they give up in a negotiation in order to get legal status for Dreamers? And the other issue is these evil people, and they are evil, believe me, they say, well, we'll give these Dreamers legal status, but we won't give them a path to citizenship. And what that will do, that will create a non-voting underclass in this country. And if people don't understand that, they will understand that if you don't have the right to vote, you have little power in America. So,
you want to rest?
No, yeah, maybe, but we'll have to get up to the wall. I won't stop before the wall. Yeah, and we're talking about the horns honking. The honk of a horn for me is like a little piece of gold. It gives me a push to keep on going. And I will have to say that I had very, very few of these vitriolic, mean responses.
How do you think, I'm thinking of these passing motorists, do you think they think about this message on the sign?
I'm beginning to be more optimistic that the vast majority of Americans are good people. That's what I've come to conclude. But they are very ambivalent about this issue because of the way this public attack on immigrants has taken place. They're ambivalent. They're thinking, well, why should... The questions that they ask me, two questions they ask me, why didn't they apply for citizenship? And the answer is, because they can't apply for citizenship. If you come into this country illegally, under the present laws, you cannot apply for citizenship without leaving the country. You must leave the country, and you must wait 10 years before we can apply them back in. So that's the answer to that question. The other question is, my parents came here legally. I came here legally. Why shouldn't they have to go through the legal process?
I hear that.
Different circumstances. My parents weren't fleeing from danger. These people are. So,
how do you feel?
A little tired, but that's every day. And there's no doubt that I'll take it.
No.
No, you know. Okay, someone told me that I'm supposed to allow. People asked to carry my sign. My friend Arturo, who I've come to know, he's the head of immigration services at the Archdiocese. He's kind of been my mentor. And as I got further into this, I got to know him, and he pushes me. And he said, Al, he said, when people ask to carry your sign for you, you should say yes. Don't say no, because I was saying no. He says, don't say no.
Did he have a reason?
Yes, because he said it's a sign of respect for them. They're wanting to do it because it's a sign of their support for me. And he said, you should honor that request. So, this wall, when I'm on the way home and I'm really tired, this wall is like I take my walk in pieces.
Oh,
because
good.
If I start looking at it ahead, it becomes
discouraging.
Yes. So, I have certain marking spots where if I feel I need to, I stop and rest maybe for a minute. And one of those marking spots is up here, just at the end of the wall. There's another wall on the other side of that driveway. I sit on that rock there. No, we can't go yet.
No, my gosh. Big truck coming. It'll squash us like a bug.
Now we can go.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If we go a little, somebody's taking a left here, but they waited for
you
us.
You can move, man.
So here we are in my house. This is where I'll leave you, and I walk up to the end of the sidewalk up there and back to my house. I walk a little extra to make up for the fact that I didn't go all the way to the end, so I won't have cheated. I don't want to tell fibs to people.
Oh.
And thank you very much.
Thank you, Al. Say hi to Carmen.
That was a morning walk with Rod Dornan, also known as Al, on one of his daily walks in support of dreamers, immigrants, and refugees. Find the audio and photos and related bells and whistles of interest tonight at reasonablycatholic.com. And one last time, please do what you can to support WESU so we can make our goal by the end of the fiscal year on June 30th. Thanks. I'm Maria Johnson, back next Tuesday with a 4th of July themed episode about the character, or lack thereof, of presidents. Now stay tuned for The Jive at 5, followed by Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat.